Man.
Yes. Can we kick it?
Let's kick it off. Yeah. Yeah. This is number. This is going to be number 85, I think, if I got my numbers right.
Yep.
It's been a while, it seems, Dwayne.
I know. It's weird because
Well, you all don't know, but you know, we recorded a couple
back ahead of back. Time. Yeah. And so we haven't seen each other for a couple of weeks, yeah, so to speak, or maybe almost 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah. So so it's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Just kind of getting back into it. It feels like a longer hiatus than it might seem to you guys.
It has. So it has. I think the fire alarm's going off upstairs.
Oh, okay. Somebody got
smoke alarm, I should say. Smoke alarm. They're cooking some
bacon.
Cooking some
no. I don't know.
We found this new way to heat up our tortillas when we have street tacos.
Oh, yeah.
Just turn on the gas range and put them right on the range top.
Oh.
And just flip them.
Yeah.
But sometimes if you get a little
If
you get a squirrel and distracted, you know, it can smoke pretty quick.
You get that text message from somebody. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. My daughter's probably burned some. So, yeah, it's been a while. So, I'm looking forward to chit chatting with you a little bit.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Like we normally do. Thank you for everybody for hanging on. And I really want to say thanks for everybody that listened to the last couple that were challenging to listen to, I think, as far as our side of it.
Yeah.
Technically, but the guests sounded great, and so appreciate your patience with that. And
yeah, hopefully I'm sounding better.
Yeah, I mean, you sound great to me. I mean,
I'm working on it. Yeah. But
just gotta stay right in that mic, Dwayne.
I'm staying in it, right in it.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks to everybody. Mm-hmm. How was your week? Last few days.
Long drives lately, but it's good. It's busy. More projects here. It never ends, man.
Keeps going. Yeah,
it never ends. I'm telling you, I gotta give a little props to my wife. She, we broke up. Probably we didn't break up. Okay, so wait for the rest.
Yes, you better keep going.
We broke up about 7 yards of concrete by hand.
By hand
with a good old 10-pound. Heavy maul, sledge, and are replacing it. We're pouring a new patio on the backyard to make it a little bit more useful on the ground
level.
And so we just finished. Well, we didn't finish. We found another hidden piece last night.
Oh, really?
That was about the size of a 60-pound medicine ball.
Yeah.
Circumference, probably 18-inch round, maybe
it was
bigger.
Roundish.
It was kind of round, but now that I chipped away at it, and now it is round, because it's the only way I could get out of the hole was to roll it out.
Yeah.
So it's still sitting out there. We might just put it in the corner for keepsake.
And you failed to mention, like, you and your wife have done it during, like, the hottest days we've had this summer.
Yeah, so it's been warm. So we've been kind of tired and wore out, but it's been good. We've been doing it together, and I just mentioned the other day, you know what the best thing will be when this is all done is we can say, we put the sweat and tears into this one.
Yeah, that's some real sweat equity right there.
Yeah, there it is. So it's been good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Just working. Working from home and just going through the same stuff. I can't think of anything. I have some projects in the backyard that I go outside when it's cooler and try to work on, and then start sweating too much, and I had to go inside and. Yeah. And give it a rest for a little bit, but I have nothing but time, so so it's not a big deal to stretch some of these projects out a little bit longer.
There we go. Another thing I wanted to mention.
Yeah, what's that?
It's been 5 years since I first started talking about this topic with Pac-12 side judge Bernie Holscher.
Yeah,
local guy. And then really started thinking about it 3 years ago when we had Justin Nelson on on some easy recovery, non-impact recovery on Mondays following game days.
Yes.
I finally got a dang road bike. So me and Dwayne are going to be hitting the roads here soon enough.
Hitting the road.
And I'm really excited about, you know, because running is hard on the joints as we get older. So trying to find some other ways to stay fit. So excited.
Yeah, exactly. So
enough of that.
Enough.
Any
of
emails
that.
To read today? I don't know if there is.
We have snail mail, which is like we got in the.
Oh yeah, clock guy.
So this is from, remind me of his name.
Ron.
Epperly. Yeah, Ron Epperly.
Yeah.
AKA Clock Guy.
Should I read this?
I think you can read some of it.
Says Dwayne and Tyler, trust you guys are doing well. Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say thanks for all you do by sending a small contribution to the cause. Stay safe. In quotes, the clock guy, Ron Epperly.
Yeah.
Great attitude there.
He did not have to, like, one, send us a note, and two, give us a contribution. But thank you so much
for taking
the time to do that. And hope to have you on in the future.
Yeah. Right? We got some thoughts.
Talk about
that.
What you do. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good email or good snail mail. That's the first time we read a snail mail.
Yeah,
excuse me. Yep. on this deal. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And so thanks to our patrons as well, other folks who contribute to us.
Absolutely.
Some people aren't comfortable with the whole interweb and putting their credit card in there and that sort of thing. So occasionally we get a snail mail with a check in there. For kind of a one-time contribution,
which we
appreciate.
Yep.
Thank you.
Play scenarios. They're all done for the year.
We're done.
For this season. This podcast season.
Yeah.
Thank you, good idea. Seth.
You had Monday Night Scenario. Yeah. So, and then Seth Neeson here, local official, he helped us out because it was like just becoming too much. Mm-hmm. And so he did a great job of posting those every week and replying. And
facilitating and all that good stuff.
So, yeah, good stuff.
So thanks for all that participation. Averaged probably 150 participants in that each week, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice little group.
So one of the things I want to talk about before, we have a guest today, by the way, we're going to get to. But one of the things I want to talk about is we really only have 2 episodes left in this podcast season. Normally,
including this one.
Yep. So this one and the next one.
Yep.
So we still need to talk more about it, but talking about what are we going to do during the what would have been a season that we won't be working.
Right.
What we might do. So we might throw in some special episodes and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, kind of a segue.
Yes.
We have some friends of ours.
Oh my gosh.
Who are just starting their podcast journey. And I think it's starting in September.
That's correct.
So let me read this this note from a guy, Monty. So let's see. So the podcast or the description is, the name of the podcast is The Unofficial Lounge.
Yes.
That's the website and the podcast.
Yep.
Ashanti, Cravon, and Monty.
Yep.
We're here to give you the insight into some of the biggest plays you remember involving the people wearing the stripes. We look at the grit it takes to become an official while exploring the history of officiating with the people who made it. It's more than black and white. And so their first show drops on September 30th.
September
3. September 3rd. 3. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't September know why 3rd. I put the 30. 3rd. September 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's a Wednesday. They're going to drop them every 2 weeks after the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And so it should be entertaining. It'll be different than this one, right? It won't be like rules talks and that sort of thing, but definitely entertaining. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to listen. It's gonna be a little more laid back. It sounds, you know, some stories and some just straight talk and a good time. So
yep,
we're looking forward to that. And
I was gonna say we'll put the information in the show notes.
Yep,
but the website is unofficiallounge.com.
That's it.
unofficiallounge.com.
And we're going to close today's show
with
their intro.
Okay.
So don't hang up.
A little teaser. Yep.
So don't turn it off before the end.
Yeah.
You'll get their intro and listen to Monty's wonderful voice, and then you'll get a fight song if you want to stay with that one. But
there you go.
There we go. So a new podcast, you know, it keeps growing. This football officiating podcast world keeps kind of growing up a little bit with more ideas and more avenues and more and more lanes to ride in. And this is
exactly
another. So it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, great stuff. So
how to reach us?
How to reach us? It's been a while. So well for us, I don't know. Feels like a while. So you can reach us wherever podcasts are disseminated, I guess, or something to that effect. So typically iTunes, most people listen to iTunes, but Spotify. Google Play is actually changing over. We got an email that Google Play is switching over to a different app. So it's the same, similar thing, but just a new app. So if you're a Google Play person, you probably already know. Email, rule11officials@gmail.com. Twitter, @rule11officials. And the website, rule11officials.com. Please subscribe to our emails. If you haven't, then you'll get updates what we're doing in during the season and that sort of stuff. So
there it is.
So we have a guest. We have a guest.
We have a guest today.
Yeah.
Who are we talking to?
Who are we talking to? We're talking to Southern California legend.
I'm going to read the accolades, it sounds like a legend when we introduce him.
So Rich Colon, he's the director of football operations for the Southern California College Football Officials Association.
Okay.
And he is pretty much a legend there. He's well known. We'll hear more about him and his program down there coming up.
And that's a lot of JUCO stuff, junior college, community college type stuff. And we're going to hear a lot about, like Dwayne just said, a lot about his program. So it should be good.
Correct.
He sent us a nice email a month or so ago. And like usually happens.
Yep.
Let's talk. And here we are. So give us a few minutes for that. But first, like always.
Yes.
Quote of the week.
Quote of the week. Let's see. If you have the courage to begin, you have the courage to succeed. If you have the courage to begin, you have the courage to succeed. And that was from David Viscott.
Only takes a beginning.
Yep, yep. So.
Solid.
That was it.
Okay, listen. We're going to listen to a quick little, quick snippet of a fight song. Then we're going to get on the phone with Rich Colon. And hang tight, huh? Here we go.
I guess the first question a lot of listeners would want to know, especially if they want to get in your conference, is what are you looking for in officials?
Well, first of all, I want to be good. I mean, I want them to have had it. I want them to have had success at the current level they're at.
We get so fancy and so arcane, and we get so into these complicated rules that we lose sight of the basics. We lose sight of the fact of things that a grandmother in row 58 know.
Fussing about, well, they got that game and we got that game and that crew wouldn't have that downgrade. And if I was on that crew and I was younger and probably shouldn't have said anything, and I go, hell, if you ain't happy where you are, get better. I mean,
the people that I think really well of, that I think are really good replay officials, Jerry Meyerhoff among them, are people that can be calm under fire, because sometimes you've got to make a very, very fast decision. And then once the game stopped, there's pressure to make a timely decision. And sometimes it's the difference in who might win the game.
Okay, Dwayne, like we talked about in the director, in the intro there.
Yeah.
Rich Colon.
Yes.
Director of football operations for the Southern California Football Officials Association. He sent us an email a month or so ago, a very kind email. And he says, hey, let's have a talk.
We need to have you as a guest.
Here we are. Rich, how are you doing?
Very good. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on and hear a little bit about your program and yourself, actually. So,
how are things down in Southern California?
Well, it's not the typical football summer. I mean, everybody is up and end and we don't know what's going on. And, even with the Division I conferences and, different things that are happening across the nation. I heard today that Notre Dame is not going to play Navy, which is a very sad thing. First time in a long time. Who would have ever guessed this is happening to us? And So yeah, other than that, you know, I've got 13 grandkids and everybody's healthy. We just finished a week at the lake, which we've gone to for about 35 straight years. And
wow.
So it's vacation so is over. And
13 grandkids. You are blessed.
Well, I am. I have four daughters that, you know, all graduated from college in 4 years and all have married successful men. And, you know, for that, I couldn't be happier. In fact, one's a football official. I think you know him, Bill Robers.
You know, oh, yeah, I know Bill. He's on my crew.
Oh, is he? Oh, I didn't know that.
So he doesn't know. He doesn't know you're on, but he'll
no,
get
he
a
doesn't.
Kick out.
No, I didn't.
No,
know.
I didn't. See, small world.
Yeah,
here we are.
Yeah,
here we are.
He's too smart for me. I don't. He's a very smart man.
He is. He is smart. Lawyer. But yeah, he'll get a kick. One that you mentioned his name on on a podcast, yeah. But yeah. So the first thing we usually start out with is a career overview. Can you, I mean, you've been a part of this, a part of football officiating for a long time. Could you give us a overview of your career?
Sure, I'd like to. You know, basically my very first class in community college in 1965 was sports officiating, an 8 a.m. class. There was a gentleman that taught the class named Kamansky, what was his first name? A legendary football official in the Big Eight at that time. And, you know, it was mostly athletes in the class. And, you know, I got kind of interested and I asked some good questions. And one day after class, he pulled me aside and said, are you really interested in officiating? And I said, well, yeah, it's kind of neat. And I knew my playing career wasn't going to last very long. So he said, well, let me tell you, if you want to be a high school official, you have to go up to Los Angeles at the time. There was no local units at the time. There was one unit that covered, you know, L.A. from San Pedro to Pasadena to Long Beach, everywhere.
Wow.
And I'll never forget that first meeting. There was 500 officials at the meeting in a big auditorium. And I'll never forget the first meeting, they were fighting over going. They all were wearing at that time what they called broadcloth shirts, long before your time. But it's like a dress shirt.
Okay.
And then they were going to the knit shirt after that. And they got up and yelled and screamed. And I mean, you would have thought the world was coming to end because these old timers did not want to change from the broadcloth to the knit shirt that we wear today. So nothing really has changed. I think we still fight like dogs at those meetings. And, you know, it's kind of a unique group of people. So that was my first experience at that. And then I started doing, you know, high school games and did those for a long time, 8-9 years. And there was never thought about, you know, really moving up. And one day, Chuck Stewart, who's in the NFL now, asked me, he said, do you want to work a scrimmage? In those days, we had, you know, Cal State Fullerton, Long Beach State, they were playing football. So I went over there and got to know some people and decided, heck, if I'm going to do this, I might as well try to do it at a higher level than the high school. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got started in community college football, which I'd like to talk a little bit about later. And I worked that for, probably 10, 12 years. And in 1984, I was hired in at that time the Big West Conference, which was a Division I conference that, you know, has since really probably become the WAC or the Mountain West, but it had New Mexico State, UNLV, Long Beach, Fresno, you know, those kind of schools, and pretty competitive conference at that time. And I worked at until basically it ended. And then I was hired by Jim Blackwood in the WAC conference and worked that for about 4 or 5 years. And then Ken Rivera hired me in the Mountain West and CFO West, which I worked until I retired and went into replay. So, you know, I worked, I was very fortunate to work probably 10, 12 bowl games. I became a referee about my fifth year and was, you know, white hat for the rest of my career. You know, got to go in those days. We, they had split crews in the early when officiating started. So if one of our schools were playing, you know, another school, they would have three officials from one school, four or one conference, and three from the other. In those days, we were six. So, I mean, I was lucky enough to work at Ohio State, Nebraska, Georgia on split crew games. And obviously, they were money games for our schools going in, and not a whole lot of pressure. But I was able to, you know, work in those kind of atmospheres in the big stadium. So I thought that was really nice and a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Then again, basketball was, I was always a basketball official, worked 29 years on the court, and mainly in the West Coast and the Big West Conference. And, you know, that was, you know, wasn't really my love, but I was able to survive 29 years on the court. I have a good personality, and in those days you could get a long ways with a personality. So
yeah. Yeah. That's true today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
wow. That's a good career. And still going, right?
Yeah.
Currently
I'm currently a replay official in the Pac-12 conference.
Okay.
So it's R2 in the Pac-12.
Right. Okay. So it's, the story is not even over yet. We still got a lot more to write. That's awesome. That's great to hear. You mentioned you wanted to talk a little bit more about community college. So let's talk about the SCCFOA, a little overview, but let's just start with your role. What's your role in the SCCFOA?
Okay. Let me just, I think it's interesting to bring everybody up to date of what the state of California does for community college or two-year athletics, because I don't think it's anywhere in the country has these kinds of programs. And California is a kind of a screwed up state, but certainly certainly in education and athletics, it's not. I mean, we currently have 112 community colleges playing athletics.
Wow.
69 still play football. And we play at a pretty high level. Last year we had in football alone over 5,000 student athletes participated. Out of those 5,000 student athletes in the South, over 580 received scholarships to four-year schools from our, you know, the 37 schools we have here in the South. We have in the state, we have 12 what we call all sports conferences that play all the sports. I'm the commissioner of the South Coast Conference, which is a 11 schools here in Southern California. So I'm responsible for their eligibility, their scheduling, the problems, you know, discipline, things like that. But, you know, football is really, the commitment to football is really tremendous. This year, we should have opened, you know, in a month, and we'll open now in January, but we'll have two $55 million facilities on two different campuses. So that's $110 million, you know, dollars on stadiums. We have one of our schools that just put in a $5 million scoreboard. Oof. So the money is, the funding system, and I know I've been involved in Arizona, and they dropped football last year, and we got a bunch of their officials, which I'll talk about later. But we fund, if a student is a full-time student, whether he's an athlete or not, the state pays the college about $5,200 per student that's full-time to support their teachers, their buildings, and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got 100, you know, student athletes that are playing football, they're being rewarded by the state quite a bit of money. So it behooves the colleges to have athletics, because the more athletes they have, and to be an athlete, you have to take 12 units and be enrolled in 12 units. That's a full-time equivalent, which gets the school about $5,200 per student. So that's why I think athletics in California has been so, you know, well accepted. We've had, you know, a lot of, you know, good people coming out of it. You know, we've baseball and you know, the 2-year athlete, at least in California, he's a 2-year athlete, not always because of his ability to play the game. It's other issues that he has in his life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he can't get the NC2A Division I scholarship because he might not have had success in the high school level. So if he goes to a community college and has success, then his chances of the scholarships, you know, greatly increase. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I said, in the South alone, we had 5,800, you know, 580 students that receive full-time scholarships, not to all Division I. There are a lot Division I, but mostly NAIA, Division II, you know, these kinds of scholarships. But you're still getting, yeah, an education for free.
That's right.
Yeah. I was, you mentioned that. I was watching Last Chance U.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Their new season is based on California Community College.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah,
it's Laney College up north that won the state championship a couple years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's basically what you said, right? Yeah. It's right. A lot of great athletes who maybe have trouble in school, and this is their last chance. They're trying to get to...
This is their stepping stone.
Yeah, stepping stone. So a lot of good football in
colleges. You know, if you watch it, the officials... The big difference is when you go from high school to community college here, the game is so much quicker, so much faster. Mm. Players, mm-hmm, are big. A couple years ago, we had that started their career at a community college were a first and second round NFL draft choice. I mean, that's the kind of people we're getting.
Yeah.
Again, the reason we're getting them is because, you know, they can't qualify to get in at the Division I level for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
So, It's a great program, and it's been going on. So you asked me about my role.
On the officiating side, kind of, could you talk about the SCCFOA and how they fit into some of these community colleges stuff, and then your role?
Yeah, sure. We for years we would to get to work a community college game, the assigners, and would just go to the high school units and say, you know, who's interested in working community college? And they would give the best names out of their association. And that's from San Diego to Santa Maria, about a 400-mile span. So the assigners were just basically working off names given to them by high school associations. Mm-hmm. In those days, the early days, we had 5 officials. And, you know, you would work 2 games a day because games were always scheduled at 1 and 7. Mm. And some were good that they, you know, recommended, some weren't. So along about 1980, there was a gentleman, Fred Gallagher, who's a retired, you know, Pac-12 official. And he said, you know, we need to somehow get everybody that's going to work community college in some type of a group. Mm-hmm. So we started out. You know, he was a fireman, so he had a chili recipe, and we invited everybody on a August Sunday afternoon to go to one of the community colleges where we talked about rules. Mm-hmm. And he fed everybody chili, and it kind of started that way.
Huh.
But it really got started probably, let's see, the year I put down here was about 1984. We really decided, hey, we've got to do this, and we formed the Southern California Football Officials Association. Uh-huh. And, you know, currently we have about 240 members.
Okay.
That pay dues. Dues is $85 a year, which is not very much.
No.
It does not guarantee them games. It guarantees them instruction. And our instruction is really one clinic in the summertime, mandatory. This year it'll be Zoom. And then we have 11 areas that we provide, you know, they have to go to 4 meetings in the area that they live in. All, you know, instructors there are Division I officials that are willing to give back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we basically geographically put the areas together so they wouldn't have to drive more than 20, 30 miles. About 1990, the Las Vegas group, you know, had no community college to work. We had, you know, Mark Perlman and Daryl. we had good officials down there looking for places to work. So we decided to let them in the, you know, Southern California group. And obviously we've had a lot of great officials come out of there. Gary Reed kind of leads that group down there. We probably have 15 officials that are willing to drive 4 to 5 hours to one of our games just to get snaps, just to get the opportunities. Yeah. And last year, I'm sure you've heard that the Arizona had six, I think, schools that did not play football. Their budgets were cut or whatever the reason. So they came to us and said, you know, we'd like to join your group. And, you know, I felt bad because, I've driven to Arizona. I have a daughter that lives there. That's 6 hours, 6.5 hour drive. And so we ended up with about 10 members out of Phoenix, Arizona, and in the area around Phoenix. And we decided to, I had a Pac-12 guy that was on the Pac-12 development list, and he wanted to be a referee. So we kind of created a little crew out of Arizona. So I had five of those guys drive in, and they met the two other officials on the way. So, and they enjoyed it. The coaches accepted them. I think they all will tell you that their experience here is, you know, much better than the experience in the Arizona schools because of the commitment that, you know, we've made, the stadiums, the facilities, the professionalism that we have. And again, it's not me. It's just everybody working together and the state being, you know, so willing to support officiating. So my role, the commissioner of the conference was a football player at the University of Washington. He was the head coach of one of our community colleges for about 30 years, Jim Satoris. Okay. And Jim, when we became one conference, which was, let me look at my notes here, 1999, we became one conference with different levels. Before, there were three different conferences, three different assigners, three different commissioners. And the idea was to bring everybody together in one 37-team conference with, you know, one commissioner, one person like myself, a signer. And we did that, and it's really worked pretty well. Jim is a fabulous guy. He works hard, tough job. You know, 37 schools all have issues, and he's on top of it, and he, you know,
impressive,
asked me to help him, and we review game films every Monday, and he never heard of huddle until he got the job, and now he's on it every Sunday and Monday.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's worked well. The 18, I went to Cruz about, I'm going to say 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
You know, I was basically in those days just assigning a referee and an umpire, and I knew when I was officiating, and even at the junior college level, even when I started Division I, you might not have ever heard of the guy, and you're working a game with them on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, they didn't know if I was any good. I didn't know if they were any good. Same thing at the community college level, even worse. So I felt that if you get a crew together, you're going to have seven guys. And pretty soon you're going to know who's a good rules guy, who's a guy that needs help on the field, and you help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really worked, you know, far greater than I ever thought. The guys have Christmas parties. And so we have 18 crews because I have 18 games, you know, every Saturday to cover. We have what we call virtual guys. And basically the crew is seven. And then we assign two people, usually new officials, that are on that crew. They don't work, but they might go and you know, chart fouls. They might go and become the timer, which we pay. So we're trying to get more people involved, you know, because it's such a big jump, like I said earlier, from high school to community college. It's night and day. And the speed and the size. So this way, at least they get the opportunity to be on the field. They get to go to a pregame. And some of our, you know, best officials have come out of that virtual role, and they get on crews. A crew's like this year, 18 crews, and I think I had three people retire, and maybe three or four that just, they were done. And that's it. So I've got very few things to fill.
I don't know. Yeah.
2 years ago, I was going to shake it up. I thought, you know what? I'm going to shake up all the crews.
Uh-huh.
Well, they lynched me. They wanted no part of it. So
no.
I learned a lesson fast that these guys are, they're loyal to each other, which when you stop and think about it, guys, it's good.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
You guys are working at a level where you're the same guys every week. You know them. You know what they can do. You know who you can go to for, you know, your rules guy, and you know who you have to cover for. And so it's worked very well.
Well, it sounds like it's a well-oiled machine on a large scale, which is impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive. And you sent us some documentation or just some notes from previous members that probably maybe still members, but currently work for a Division I level or the NFL level or right. The retired NFL officials or retired Division I officials. That was a pretty big list. And so yeah. I was just curious, what do you think, and here's a little rules talk for you. What's the impetus of all the success at that large scale, do you think, that coming out of this program is, which is pretty impressive?
Well, we did have the list I gave you should have had 37 active Division I yeah. and FCS officials.
Yeah.
We have former Division I and SCF officials, 20. Current NFL officials, 13, which Jeez. Is really amazing. And then former NFL officials, 8. I think the thing is we give them the opportunity. Uh-huh. Where else will you have a chance to work, 10 games, 7-man crews,
uh-huh.
in game situations. And I think they've I've had supervisor. I mean, Tony Carini told me once that he could fill half his, at that time, this Pac-12 staff on Southern California officials. And I think our guys that have moved up to those levels have given back. And we're proud of those people. I mean, we're doing our clinic in 2 weeks, and I've got Chris Coit, Steve Stremling, and Dean Blandino as a guest speaker. So that's a pretty good clinic.
What more do you need?
Talk.
I mean, geez.
Yeah, that's a solid clinic.
Yes, absolutely.
But it certainly wasn't me. It was just, I think, the environment that they were able to to get the experience, to get snaps. I mean, we've always talked about snaps in football. I mean, where are you going to get these kind of snaps? I mean, camps, you get, one or two games of, and you're being evaluated. Here you're getting evaluated, three or four times during the year. You're getting excellent snaps. I mean, like I said, the size and speed. And I think when supervisors see it and they hear about, somebody coming out of Southern California, I think they have a pretty good chance of getting hired. I know Gerald Austin, I talked to Gerald, and he's taken in the last 2 years, 5 of our guys that weren't even at the Division III level.
Wow.
They were at community college level, but, he's been very much involved, and I talked to him at camps, and I've had success with a couple of them, and he said, hey, send me more like that.
There you go.
And if you know Gerald, he's looking for a certain type of person and female.
Sure.
So, I mean, we've had 2 female officials that are working Division I that started with us. Actually, we have 3 with counting Kat. So 3 female officials that started with us are currently working Division I and FCF football. So you can't beat that.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, that's
we great. Know one.
Yeah. Right. We know one of them.
Yeah.
Miss Karina, right?
Karina, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
She stayed on and worked a few off weeks last week for us. I don't think she'll do that again.
So do you have a built-in mentoring program? You said people, some of the guys that have advanced have, come back to help. Is there an official mentoring program, or does that just kind of happen organically?
Well, I think it kind of organically, that's a good word. I think they come to the local meetings. So, I mean, Chuck Stewart pops into meetings that we have. Tony Carini would pop in. Carl Cheffers, if there's a meeting in Long Beach, you know, they're not going to come to everyone, but they might pop in.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, they've given back. Those guys, if you pick up the phone and call them, you know, they'll help you. We've got, you know, in Southern California, it's been and really great. And like I said, they do give back. As far as the training program, I think is pretty good. Jack Wood, longtime Pac-12 referee, and now he's in replay. Yep. Actually, I work with him.
Oh, okay.
He does the instructional program, and he has his area, the 11 area guys, like I mentioned. They conduct the meeting, and they show video. I send out three plays a week via the what do I use? Dropbox. I'm trying to find a better platform. Right now, Dropbox works good.
Yeah.
And I have the officials, and they're always tough plays, and they all, you know, I never get 50%, but I just want to show them that, you know, they're, you know, if you send out an easy play, you know, everybody gets it right. And these plays are the ones that coaches send in. I don't have to go look for them. I get enough of them emailed to me.
Yeah.
So I pick the three, you know, and I try to mix them up. I don't want to beat anybody up, but
sure.
And I think the one thing that, you know, I've noticed over the years is the official that's just come with us and he's come out of high school. And then I send out, or I'll send him a play. I said, how did you call this? What were you thinking? And they can't understand that somebody's actually looked at that play after Friday night or Saturday night. And so, you know, we all know when you guys are in the game too is, I mean, 20 years ago, we did not have the accountability that we have now. Yeah. And even at the high school level, you know, I'm sure coaches are sending in plays. I don't know if they ever get to officials. But at the community college level, you know, using huddle, I get probably, you know, 25, 30 plays a week. I get coaches that send in 40 plays and want me to look at them, and I say, sorry, no, 45. Pick five of the worst.
Yeah.
So, but we do break that down, and we do give them. Now, the referee is responsible to break down his video every week.
Okay.
And we have complete huddle access. So, and, the, you know, I think majority, you know, I'm going to say 100% of our referees, you know, will break down their game the previous week and maybe not pick out 20 plays, but pick out five plays that they discuss with their crews. So I think all that, the training and you know, again, when I was coming up, I think I worked 10 years at Division I before I ever saw myself on video. And,
oh, wow.
Because in those days, you just didn't have it.
Yeah.
And now, gosh, I mean, you know, we get, we're just scrutinized, you know, to the nth degree, and it's made us better. And I tell all our officials, you no longer can I call you up and say, hey, what'd you see? Because you better be assured that I've already seen it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So
great point.
Yeah. So Rich, I want to know a little bit more about the community college leagues you work. When is the season in a normal year? When is the season? How many games?
Okay.
Is there a postseason? Can you talk about that?
Yes. Normally, we would have started practice on August the 11th. Okay. First game is Labor Day weekend. We go 11 weeks, 10 games. There's an off week. We have, in the South, we have seven postseason games. Two of those are playoff games.
Okay.
And so we would have two teams or four teams, and it reduces to two. Then we'd have one, and then we have a state championship.
Okay.
So this year we will not have a state championship. Yeah. This year we will start practice January 15th.
Okay.
We will play a seven-game schedule, and we will still have postseason.
Okay.
So it's the coaches don't like it. I think some of our athletes, our problem is, we have a lot of athletes that would have already gone to their 4-year school after the fall semester, especially the Division I athletes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We don't know yet how many we're going to lose. Certainly, we will lose some. Weather here is not an issue, so playing in all our stadiums are, you know, synthetic turf and rain doesn't matter. And we will, you know, like I said, I think we'll be down a little bit with our student athletes, but I think overall we'll get a season in. Right now Jim has surveyed the 37 schools and 30 have committed to play a spring schedule. You know, the other ones are lingering, and again, if the thing continues, we might not play anything. So, but as of right now, we're starting practice. All our fall sports in California at the 2-year level is starting January 15th.
Okay.
And, the ADs are wondering how they're going to get trainers to cover it. But we'll play from January 15th through just about the whole month of June, even though school is out June 1st.
Huh, interesting.
So softball, baseball will go on.
Okay. Now, so with this COVID-19 in 2020, and you said you're already moving to the 15th of January, what other challenges do you guys foresee for your leagues regarding this pandemic when you guys open back up again? Anything that you foresee that might be an issue?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing, and I'm on a couple committees that are working it, and the trainers are very influential in the state of California. They have a lot of clout. They've come up with a document that will be a little challenging. I think they're talking about a one-time COVID-19 test with a daily, before they go to practice, temperature check and asking a series of questions. If a student athlete has a fever, they go home. How long they'll be quarantined if they do have COVID-19, I don't know. It has not been determined.
Right.
Obviously, that's a wild card everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's a big challenge. And the other challenge is just basically trying to take a whole year of athletic competition, because we compete in 18 different sports.
Right.
And trying to, you know, put all that into one semester, it's going to be difficult.
Tough.
It's going to be difficult for the, you know, everybody took a 30% reduction in schedule. So every sport took 30%. We just feel it was important enough, you know, for our student athlete, because we only have them for 2 years. And if they miss a year, during this, we canceled softball and baseball and track and field, and they all got their year of eligibility back.
That's good. Okay.
How many of those stay, we don't know, but it looks like quite a few.
Okay.
We have some transfer issues, rules that we waived for all sports. So you have to be at the school. And if you start at one California community college and transfer to another, you have to have 12 semesters completed at the new college. That keeps kids from just transferring all around the state.
Sure.
And that's all waived this year, so you could see a lot of transfers.
Okay.
So we're dealing with it. There's been committee after committee and Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
And we certainly don't have all the answers, but we're working towards it. And we're getting support, you know, really good support right now from deans and athletic directors, and certainly the coaches want to play.
Sure.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But it's crazy. I mean, who would have ever guessed? I mean, a year ago today, we were sitting here and getting ready for football and excited, and clinics are over and we're go, go, go. And now, you know, everybody's up and don't know. I mean, I feel bad for the Division III in our area postponed till January, but I heard that's not going to probably play either. So don't know.
Yeah, it's too bad, but it really every day is a new day.
You know,
it changes every day.
It changes every day.
I didn't hear, but I just heard of the news about Notre Dame and Navy. Well, why wouldn't they play that? I mean, you would think that's such a traditional game.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame certainly probably needs games. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of variables.
That's definitely
what we heard today about the Big Sky. That would be horrible.
Yeah. We're still waiting to hear the official word. Right. There's rumors out there, but so yeah. I think everybody's sort of in the same boat as far as kind of waiting and seeing. Some people have got news already, obviously, across the country.
Yeah.
And others are still waiting. So
yeah. Well, guys, listen, go ahead. I think this was a great overview and a learning experience for me, anyways, of how large community college in JUCO is and down in Northern and Southern California, and lots of opportunity for football officials. It sounds like a great program.
Yeah, it's been a springboard for, as you mentioned, a lot of great officials coming out of that area. So
And again, it's not certainly not me. It's just the opportunities, let's say, that these officials have to get better. And you guys are officials. You know, the more snaps you get, the better you're going to be. And the more snaps you get at the highest level. And, you know, again, community college is those snaps are good snaps. And our guys are getting them and they're utilizing them and they're attending camps. And, you know, again, so many people that have moved on. It's incredible. It just really is. And again, it's not certainly not me. It's just a whole effort down here in California.
Well, we all, no one person can do it all. We all have to work together, and it's just a culmination of a lot of good officials that help each other. I mean, you mentioned it with all the big names that continue to come back to give back and help mentor the community college football officials to get better. And that says a lot, and that's what it takes. So thank you so much for shining a little light on the SEC FOA with us and hopefully a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And we really appreciate that time.
Yeah, certainly a unique place to be an official. Mm-hmm. And so, I was great to learn about it.
Yeah, I don't think you'll find any place in the country that has this. I really don't.
Yeah.
In fact, there's the commissioner reminded me, I didn't tell you, but we have more football, two-year community college football teams in the state of California than they do in the entire country put together. Wow.
That's wild.
Oh, wow.
That's an incredible stat right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, you said it too, right? The state has it figured out with help from the government and how they're providing money to the institutions with keeping athletics going. It helps everybody, right? It helps the kid. It helps the coach. It's a big, good circle. So,
and the funding is tremendous by the state, but most of these new stadiums are built with what they call bond money.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they let's say Cerritos College is in a community. They go out and they put up a bond and they have all their student athletes go knock on doors and they tell people, you know, for $11 a month, we could have a new swim stadium and this and that. Yeah. And the bonds pass everywhere here.
That's cool. That's great. That's
and
great
it's pushed. And the bond is a community college bond for that particular school.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they're getting all the money. I mean, if you ever get down here, just drive around our schools. They're building buildings and stadiums and gyms. And everybody goes, where they don't have any money to sweep the floor, but they got a brand new $10 million gym.
Build it and they will come, as they always said, right?
Yeah, they just can't clean it and staff it.
That's okay. They'll work on that later. So. Rich, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, really, anytime, guys. I hope it comes out. You can take out any part you want.
Okay.
No,
we're going to leave it all in there. I promise you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Rich, you take care of yourself and good luck in the future. And hopefully everything works out this winter.
Good luck
with
the Big Sky tomorrow, guys.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Take care of yourself.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Southern California's got a lot of football, sounds like.
That is an understatement.
Sports. I mean, not just football. Sports. He mentioned a lot, you know, JUCO and community college as a whole. Plays a lot of athletic, student-athlete sports, and that's pretty cool to hear.
Yeah, I imagine Texas is the same way.
I'm sure, yeah.
I mean, these are like two huge states that...
I mean, rules get started in Texas.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they got to
get... Yeah. So, and particularly like with the weather being so great down there,
right. Yep.
People need stuff to do.
Yep.
And so it sounds like the state at least is giving incentive to have sports, for these schools to have sports.
That's right.
And then on, so with that, officials kind of reap the benefit of that,
mm-hmm.
and are able to, like for he said, get it, like he said, get a great opportunity to get a lot of snaps. And
right.
So
yeah, I mean that's just it, right?
Yep.
You can only get so much opportunity, and where it is, they're taking advantage of it, and that's great stuff. And he shed a great light on all of that. I mean it's kind of mind blowing how many schools. You imagine trying to
just
get calls from 30 to 37 schools on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. It's like 37
sending
schools.
You 40 plays.
Like any one
that's
conference.
A quarter of the game.
Any power, like the biggest Power 5 conference has, what, 12 schools or
right,
something?
Right, right. And, so, and playing a 10 or 11 game season.
Yeah. And playing an 11 game season, post game, postseason.
That's solid.
You know, playoff games and then like these bowl games at the end of the season. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. That's
I'm calling
snaps.
Road trip next fall.
Road trip. Give us
come
a
come on, Rich.
Yeah, give us a put us
that's
on a
14-hour drive. But hey, we'll do it one time.
Yeah, just quarantine down there for a while.
Yeah,
be,
right. No, let's say thanks again to Rich for shedding some light on their program. It was very nice to hear and nice to talk to him. So it was good to. It's always nice to learn something new, and we learned something new today.
Certainly did.
So that's it for today. I don't have anything else. Do you?
No, not really. But just remember the new podcast.
Yep.
You'll be playing
play their
kind
intro,
of a teaser.
A little teaser.
Yep, from there.
So take a listen and give them a shot. We're going to probably say this one more time on the last episode. But the official lounge, say what's the name of it?
The unofficial lounge.
The unofficial lounge.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's three folks talking about stories and all that good stuff, and it's... Man, they sound good. I'm telling you what.
Yeah.
So check out their intro.
Yep.
And then we'll catch back up with you next week, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Take care, Dwayne. We'll talk to you again.
Yep. Bye. Bye.
The Unofficial Lounge with Ashante, Craybon, and Monty. We're here to give you the insight into some of the biggest plays you remember involving the people wearing the stripes. We look at the grit it takes to become an official while exploring the history of officiating with the people who made it. It's more than black and white.
Not a game. We talking about practice.